Hey everybody, welcome back to Parnon Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan, here with Brady, PJR, and a special guest. So actually our very, very first interview here on the Parnon Podcast is with Ryan Brath. He is the senior editor over at golf.com for golf equipment. And we are just incredibly lucky to have him on our small time podcast, but he was nice enough to take what is a late night out of his day after getting the kids to bed to be on the podcast. So we appreciate it. I have three kids as well, so I get it. But Ryan, thanks so much for being on.
Hey, no worries. No worries. And once we finish here, I'm going to probably finish gripping up a set of golf clubs for my buddy. So late night, one way or the other.
Perfect. Awesome. I know you have, how many kids do you have? I know you said you had to do bedtime, which is where I came from
two.
As well.
I got two. Okay. So my wife, we split bedtime. One gets one gets the other. That's generally the rule. Rule of the house.
That's how we work it here too. Yep, that's exactly how we do it here. Do you have boys, girls, combo?
A couple girls.
Nice, me. I have three girls.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. Anytime I go to the playground and there's like little boys or like you go to pick up at school or something, and I see like little kids running around, like, are they all like this? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, wow, I feel like I got lucky here. How did my parents do it with three boys? I don't know how they did it, but like they sure figured it out.
Yeah, dude, yeah, PJ, I have a couple too.
I have a boy and a girl. The oldest is a boy, and it's just obnoxious the things that they do. It's just I'm dumbfounded half the time. Today is actually, I'm going out of town tomorrow, so I did a daddy-daughter day today with my daughter for her birthday. And I took her and got her nails done and did all this stuff. She turns five, but the girl, as of the moment, is definitely easier than the boy. But I couldn't imagine having two boys. There's no way. But I'm so glad for them. I'm so grateful for the balance in this house.
Yeah. I've heard it's easy now when they're young. I don't know how old yours are. Mine are 8, 5, and 1, all girls. And then I've heard it could switch when they get to like preteen, teenage years. So I don't know how that's going to work out, but we'll see.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't speak for myself, but I think like teenagers in general are just a pain in the butt.
100%.
I know I was. I'll tell you right now, I was for sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
that was awful.
He's terrible.
Brady was not awful. He was nice kid.
He's still nice.
Angel.
All right, so I'd love to start off, Ryan, if you wouldn't mind sharing with us, like, how did you get into this world, like not only the golf world but specifically like the golf equipment fitting world? I mean, I've snooped quite a bit of your stuff. I know that you're very, very good at what you do as far as club building goes, and you know your stuff. How did you get into where you are now? I know you've gone through like Golf WRX and Club Champion and some other ones. So hit us with whatever long or short version you'd like to give of that story.
The long version is pretty long, so I'll stick to the Coles notes. But basically, I was a kid that liked to take things apart. And as a kid that liked to take things apart, when I started riding a bike, I basically disassembled my bike and, like, with some help from my dad, put it back together. Skateboarding, same thing. I remember we had a toaster oven break, and I was like, can I take it apart? My dad's like, here's a ratchet set, go have at it. And I'm pretty sure it was just a way to get quiet time. Same thing with a lawnmower. Took a lawnmower apart when I was a kid, probably maybe like 10 to 13. I couldn't tell you exactly when it was, probably closer to like 13, 14. And, you know, like pieces of the bearing, like all over the place. And I asked my dad, I was like, can I ever put this thing back together? And I think he looked at me for like 3 seconds. It was like, nope. I was like, that's fine. That's cool. But then I got into golf. I think it was 97. So I was 10, 11 years old. And I was someone who, just, you know, I think it would have been the year after Tiger won the Masters, I guess, or what year he won the Masters. And this kid called me up, said, hey, you want to go play golf? You know, I'm a kid using the landline. I'm that old now. And I was like, hey, like, dad, do I have golf clubs? Yeah, okay. I can play golf. So got into golf, got a little membership, did some of that, like did the junior camps and all that stuff when you're a kid. And then I found out one day that you could take golf clubs apart. And I don't know if it was... I always distinctly remember this. Like, I was watching golf and Phil Mickelson was talking about like grinding the leading edge of his wedge for more spin. Years ago, I was a young teenager, not knowing what this meant. And I thought, cool. So I probably took a file to like the leading edge of like the wedge that I had in my bag. Was there for hours just grinding away. I'm sure, again, my parents just got complete silence with me with tools doing something. And I basically ground all the bounce off this wedge and ruined it. And I was like, okay, this probably isn't like, this obviously didn't work, but like, I'd like to understand more. And from there, it was learning that all these components actually go together to create a golf club, a grip, a shaft, and a head. Anytime you walk into a store, like you just see them together, to physically see them apart was something that was extremely unique. And because of that, I realized there was a company called Golfsmith out of the States, and you could order components. And they had a place in Canada. And because of that, I would order some stuff and I'd kind of look at it and I didn't really know how to put it together. And from where I lived at the time, it was like almost, I would say almost 2 hours to get to like where their little like warehouse was in an industrial part of Toronto, basically. And I was like, I'd love to be able to like learn how to put one of these things together. And so my parents were very nice. And they're like, yeah, let's go do this. It's like 60 or 70 bucks, right? And again, parents get to drop you off and they come back. So it was me, two older gentlemen and like one of the guy's wives. Like that was it. I was like this weird young kid who was like, why is this kid here? Like, is it like daycare? Like, what is this whole thing? Right. And I just thought it was fascinating. And from there, I just wanted to put golf clubs together. And fast forward, I go to school. I work at a golf course, clean clubs, just learn about clubs, like memorize catalogs and what's in the bags from all kinds of golf magazines and everything like that. And kind of became the kid who worked in the shop. I was like, go ask Ryan the question. Like, he'll tell you about a shaft or a grip or whatever and all that kind of stuff. And then went to school, worked at a big box store, worked my way up to working with OEMs, basically bugging every rep that came in there and be like, hey, like tech rep jobs, I know they have in the summer in Canada. It's a seasonal position like a lot of places. And from there, kind of took that, rolled with it, started building. I always had like my own little shop. I'm sitting in my shop right now. And then from there, I got very lucky. There was a company that opened up in Toronto that was doing custom club building at the time. Very, very high end, similar to like what Cool Clubs does or what Cool Clubs. Yeah. What Cool Clubs does in the States. A group of individuals brought that format to Canada. And one of the people that worked there was Ian Fraser of TXG, mm-hmm. Club Champion. Sure. So I got to work with him. And at that point, I was already building clubs all the time. Like I worked at the big box store. I was responsible, worked my way up to basically running the shop there. They needed a club builder. I got very lucky, got the job there and worked there for I think almost 5 years. Left the golf business for a little bit. Wanted to do something a little different. Got into writing for equipment websites, talking just because I just saw a lot of misinformation out there. That was the biggest thing, is there was just a lot of stuff that people didn't really understand. And I was kind of tired of reading people talking about things that they didn't really understand. Like, okay, I can do better than this. And from there, I just started writing and producing content and using Twitter and using Instagram a little bit. And worked at, like, as you said, worked at Golf 3RX for a little bit and then just decided and got very lucky because I got an opportunity to do what I like to do. And I wrote for them for free for a long time. And because I was still working another job, so that wasn't really like a major concern for me. I was like, yeah, I'll write when I want. And it was kind of fun. And then fast forward, worked for almost 10 years, not quite 10 years, but almost 10 years later, got to work with Ian and Mike again back at TXG, which was a lot of fun in Toronto. So I was running kind of the back end with like social media, some video editing. Not like I did not do the actual editing. I just want to be very clear with that. We had Cody and Casey were some very talented editors that we worked with. And from there, I wanted to get back into writing a little bit. Position over to golf.com. I reached out, went through the interview process and got it. And to this day, it's an odd thing to be doing this, because as a kid, you read golf magazines and you're like, man, this is so cool. Like, people do this. And like, you know, I'd never, you know, you pick up a magazine, you walk by it and you just see it and you're like, man, I wonder who makes that stuff. And to be on the other side of it now, it's like, holy smokes. I'd still kind of pinch myself. I'm like, I get to do this for a living. It's kind of neat.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I kind of just never stopped bugging people until I got to the place where I wanted to get. To put it really bluntly.
That's your perfect. Well, I think we can relate to that for sure.
Just keep bugging people until you get where you want to go. I'm okay with this.
Well, so
now that you're living your dream, what is your favorite part of this? Is there a favorite part of this job? Is it like the writing? Is it the building? Is it the traveling to event? Like, is there a favorite part of it, or is it all a favorite part of it?
I get asked this a lot, and a lot of people think that like the travel is like the cool part, and the travel is a lot of fun. Like the physical travel stinks. You've been to one Holiday Inn Express. You've been to every Holiday Inn Express. It's fine.
Right.
Like I get that. The experience of going to like a tour event and like watching the best players in the world do their thing, it never gets old. It literally never gets old. It's so exciting to show up on the range on Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, and sit there and watch these guys go through their process. And just be there to witness it. I doesn't get old. It's so much fun to watch. The thing for me that's still my favorite is absolutely still my favorite thing is talking to golfers. And I think that is the one thing that it never goes over my head, because I think people are still kind of, I'd say this like kind of sounds silly, but like people are like, oh man, you answer all these questions on Instagram. Like, well, yeah, like that's kind of like, it's not that it's my job to answer questions, but my job is to like, my goal is to help people better understand their golf equipment. And like, look, I'm not Taylor Swift with like a zillion followers on like social media. So like, I'm sure she's not directly answering her DMs, right? But so like, I don't get that. I mean, it seems like a lot, but I don't really get that many questions a day. So like to help people find something that's better, or, you know, they don't know what to look for and they don't have access to a fitter, or they have a question that they're not really sure and they don't really necessarily maybe trust the person they're working with, or they think that they're just not confident in their own decision-making process. I love being able to help with that. And so to get messages back weeks later and be like, oh, I went to the fitting and tried this and talked to my fitter about like the problem from my TrackMan numbers before, and it's great. It's so much better than it was before. And that to me is still like probably the most rewarding part of what I do, is because I know that on like an individual level that like someone's going to hopefully be playing some better golf. And that never gets old. But to be standing on the range, and I think if it was last year, it was after Max Homa won one of the events, and I was there. It was at Waste Management after Genesis when Max Homa won, and he won that, right? Didn't he? Am I thinking the same
Max
thing?
Homa won the Genesis 2 years ago.
Yes. So it was. It was the week after that. I was on the range, and I was like, "Can I take a picture of his?" Like I was doing his what's in the bag, like his clubs. And I was like, I'm just holding the guy's putter who like won last week on the PGA Tour. This is kind of this is kind of a cool thing to be doing. Like, you know, it's like 14-year-old me would be like, this is dope, man. Like, this is pretty cool. So to be able to do that. And again, it really just doesn't get old.
Yeah, I can see why that wouldn't get old. Yeah, go for it, PJ.
I do have a question for you, because you said something earlier that got my attention. You're talking about how much you enjoy helping people. What is the biggest piece of misinformation that you see out there in regards to club equipment or fittings or in general? Like, what's that one thing that you hear all the time? You're like, oh my gosh, this again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I would say that the one thing that I get asked about the most, and I think it is the most misunderstood part, is like golf shafts. Because people think that, oh, like I launch it really low. Like if I just change my golf shaft, am I going to change my launch? I'm like, probably not. Like not a huge amount. Like there's always the outliers. There's always this possibility. But the loft of the driver and the way you deliver it is the number one factor, right? Like the driver head, the geometry, the center of gravity, all of those things factor in with launch and spin. And not to like plug it, but I'm going to plug it, is if you go to our golf.com, we use robot testing to test our product. Yes, we have player feedback, and we as individual testers often test a lot of different equipment, but we use a robot that delivers the golf club the same way every time. So when we go in and we can say, this is the highest launching driver in a 10.5 degree loft, this is the highest launching driver in this loft, this is the lowest spinning driver in this loft, this is the lowest spinning driver in another loft. Like we can go down and actually show that, because we're using the same shaft in every head. Now, will different shafts change that? Of course they will slightly, but what the shaft is a timing mechanism to help you deliver the golf club in the right way. And the reason I say that is because it was actually very funny. I was thinking about this the other day. So I just finished gripping a driver for my wife, made a little video about it. And she's using just reshaft her driver with an, again, just so people understand what it is. It's an Acura 140 M0, which is like a subflex of like an A flex or like a late, or would be considered like an L flex. And it's a very lightweight shaft. It's very flexible. Well, you got, if you ever talk to like Martin Baumgartner or other long drive players now, they're using very lightweight whippy shafts. So when somebody comes in and they're like, I swing at 105 and they're like, you know, I need like double X. I'm like, okay, well, let's slow down here for a second. Okay. Like, let's talk to Martin Baumgartner over here, who's just like focusing on speed. He's using like an alpha X. So let's work on the timing mechanism that's going to help you deliver the golf club to create the best results. And if it is that, perfect, because feel is something that's very subjective and all of those things factor in with how the golf club is delivered. But to say that a shaft is just going to immediately like increase launch or lower spin or do something like that, let's take a step back and look at the whole picture of the golf club as a system rather than just saying, I mean, don't get me wrong, club fitters love it. Somebody comes in and say, I want the shaft because I heard it launches lower. Not a lot of people in a business perspective are going to say, hey, I don't really want your $500, right? But at the end of the day, it does make a difference when someone goes through the process of saying, let's get fit, and ends up with a better product all together. And it is the whole system. It's not just, oh, the shaft is the engine of the golf club, because that's BS. It's the human is the engine of the golf club. Now we're going to work the transmission and everything else to make sure that that golf club works with you, the engine, which is the golfer.
Do you think, sorry, I'm going to keep asking another question here. I'm really enjoying this. Do you think the shaft profile, like launch, you're like, oh, mid or whatever, do you think that has more of an impact on it? Or do you think the weight of the shaft has more of an impact on it? So say you had like a 55 gram stiff and a 70 or a 65 gram stiff, same profile.
PJ, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Okay. Yeah, we lost your question, I think.
Oh, sorry. My question was, do you think the profile of the shaft, like the spin and launch of it, is more important to the shaft or from a fitting perspective, or the weight of a shaft?
Yeah, the profile mostly affects feel, which I think is something that most people don't really realize. If a shaft is like very, very, what is considered low launch, it's very, generally, in most cases, very stiff in the handle. And it's a little bit softer in the midsection and stiffer in the tip because of it's trying to like reduce deflection. Now that's a very generalization. You can get stuff that's stiff and like a little softer in the tip. There's all kinds of these different ways that they create variation. Mm-hmm. And that's what golfers feel. In most cases, the profile is what people feel. And if you were to compare the shaft they just talked about just a moment ago to something like a Hazardous T1100, which Jake Knapp used. He's obviously not a slow player. He's a very big dude. He's a strong dude. Uh-huh. He's a monster of a human being. I mean, I tried that shaft in, I think, a 6.0. And to say that that is like the same stiff flex 6.0 that would be a different profile in a different Hazardous product, just as an example, they're like night and freaking day. So players feel the profile because the profile affects the stiffness. And then the weight is something where for some players, they like a little bit heavier. Some players like a little bit softer. And then that becomes the timing mechanism of like what someone feels throughout the golf club. Because the whole goal is to figure out how their load profile and their strength matches up with the shaft profile and the weight to help them deliver the golf club consistently.
Okay, cool. So it's kind of like the profile of the shaft is the feel part of it, and then the weight of it is more about how you're delivering the club, or you're probably the timing too is when you're delivering the club.
Yeah, because again, if you give a very, now again, some better players will figure this out, but if you gave a very flexible shaft, and most like I would say regular golfers who play a lot, you give them a regular flex shaft or like something that's very soft, they kind of like feel that, so they kind of change their tempo a little bit, right? But if you give a player that doesn't have the strength a very heavy golf shaft, you could create a lot of stress in their golf swing because they're just fighting all this momentum that goes back and it pulls them. And then they're just trying to like manipulate their body to get it back into the impact position. So the weight is what you're looking for of the players, almost the strength that they can handle it. And then the profile is kind of that timing mechanism for feel. So the player feels like the club is working with them, so they can essentially like crack the whip. So it feels like they're releasing and like loading and releasing at the right time versus trying to manipulate their body and their swing to feel that release at a certain point.
I like that description. That makes a lot more sense. It's a lot, not a, you read a lot of convoluted stuff out there. So that was just a really nice way of putting it. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and I also just think, and Ryan, you can tell me what you think about this too, is just like, I think there is this whole, like, I don't want to say marketing scheme out there, but there is this like misinformation maybe of like, if you're a better player, like all better players are going to play like low head, like low spin, low launch. It's just kind of like, that's what we see a lot is, you know, like, well, I have an extra stiff, so I have to have low launch. I have to have low spin. I have to have triple diamond heads. I have to have all that LS stuff. And then you'll also get kind of the opposite of like a guy who, hey, I'm playing 20-year-old clubs and I'm 75 years old, and for some reason I've lost 30 yards of distance. And it's like, well, what are you playing? It's like, well, I'm in stiff flex steel shafted driver from 1997, but they don't want to, you know, or they're too stubborn. They're like, well, I just want to stay with stiff flex because that's what I feel comfortable with. So we see these two kind of like, I see this a lot when I'm fitting people. But there just does seems to be this like one side where it's like, well, I'm a better player. I'm fast and I'm a low handicap. So I have to be in low spin. Like I have to have Ventus Black, or I have to have, you know, pick and insert pro shaft there. Or the other side of the flag where it's like, this guy needs, or this girl needs something lighter with more flex, like you said, to make sure that it's not just like completely dominating them, but they will fight you tooth and nail because it's what they're used to, or their ego gets in the way. And it's like, you're 75 years old and you hit it 175 yards. Like you can't play that anymore.
I think actually I had this experience recently, going through an OEM fitting with someone, and we probably figured out, cause I'm going to mention the OEM, but, I asked them, it's a good thing. It's the way that they communicate with a golfer. And the question that I get a lot is like, oh, I'm at this certain level. Should I upgrade to like a CB or whatever? Yeah. Right. Like a blade. A lot of people ask, sure, at what point can I use, move into a blade? Right.
Oh yeah.
And the fitter asked me, he goes, well, you know, Rose Zhang plays like the Apex, the Callaway Apex. It's like, do you think you hit it better than Rose Zhang? It's like, I never thought of it. And I kind of thought that was really funny. I was like, I never thought of it that way. Like, yeah, you go look at the wear mark at Rose Zhang's 8-iron. Like, let me tell you, that thing's, it's dimed right out. Right now, that's a factor of that same thing, factor of delivery and club head speed. But, mm-hmm, you know, the idea that you can grow out of a golf club, unless you're talking about strength or you're physically growing taller, like you can play whatever you want. Like, mm-hmm, it's just a matter of like, how is that club delivered? What is the launch and spin characteristics of that golf club? And are you comfortable looking at it? Now, again, the human element, the ego, all comes into these factors. But I think it was Harry Higgs last year, a couple of years ago, was using P770s a lot of times on tour. You'll get players that will use a little bit more of a game improvement club in some cases. See a little less of it now, but you were seeing it like 3 or 4 years ago. You see these players in kind of a mixed bag of gear, and especially like combo sets now. Combo sets are so popular, it's very rare that you see anybody using a single set of irons. Like Lucas Glover hits the stink out of the golf ball and is a great ball striker, and he's got ZX7s and ZX5s. Like ZX5 is a player's distance iron. He's got those in the top end of his bag. And you know what? I don't really want to compete against Lucas Glover trying to hit a 5-iron under the green, because I'm hitting my 5-iron from 185 and he's probably hitting his from 215. So he's probably still going to hit it closer, right? Like, I think it's kind of one of those things.
Laurie also had those in there too. I think Shane Lowry also had the ZX5s too in his bag.
Yeah. Like it's one of those, it comes down to like, what are you comfortable with and what's working versus just like, I need to play this. And it's that ego element that comes into it so much that is very hard to get some players out of that mindset and into the mindset of like, what is a golf club that actually worked best for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you find getting people out of that mindset? Like, what would you do, or what do you recommend? I think it is hard sometimes when it's just like, hey, I'm like, can I play blades? It's like, you said, well, can you beat Rose Zhang? Because until you can, let's not have that conversation.
Yeah, I think in most cases once you show people the numbers, it's pretty hard to argue. Yeah. Now, some players will. Some people will want something that's very specific. In some cases, and this is I hear it. I think a lot of times I hear it from, I would say like 6 to like 11 handicaps, and that's, again, that's a generalization. but they will actually, in some cases, make the mistake of going to a golf club that is too distance oriented, and they don't create enough spin. And then they're like, I find that I get a lot of like flyers, or I have a harder time controlling ball flight. And that's fair, because it might be that of all the things they're looking for, they have a higher club head speed. So at a higher club head speed, you get greater dispersion when you start lowering spin, and you get spin fluctuation in those style of golf clubs. So in some cases, you might find that a less forgiving kind of maybe a player's CB actually worked better. Just like you could get that same handicap range, if not a higher handicap range, and they assume that they need the game improvement of the distance club, but then you get them into a CB, and because the style of that golf club actually reduces ball speed on misses. Now, this sounds counterintuitive, but because of the ball speed reduction on misses, their dispersion actually shrinks as well, because if they leave the face open and they square it up, like they square up face to path, and it's like wide open or it's a little shut, they don't miss it 30 yards right or left. Whereas you're not going to get that same thing as if you do that with a player's CB, or if you hit one off the toe, but you square it up. Yeah, the player's distance is going to go further, but you know, that might be more trouble than missing it a little shorter. So that's where the balance of like trying to figure out the right club is like, there's these all, I would say any fitter, their brain works like a decision tree. Like you've got this whole funnel here. And you see someone make 25 golf swings, you've got the funnel down a lot smaller. And then now you're looking at characteristics of their misses and their delivery, and that funnel gets a lot smaller. And now you've got probably two to three choices if you're looking at from a brand agnostic perspective, where they could kind of fit in one way or the other. And now you're just trying to figure out what works for looks, feel, sound, and all of those things that really works with the golfer the best. And once you show, like I said, to answer your question, like once you show them the numbers, a lot of times people are like, oh yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I probably shouldn't be using that anymore.
Yeah, I can kind of speak to that too. On that, what you were just saying, like going from the player's distance into something like a CB. I tried for a few years, wanting just to be in something a little bit easier to hit, something that was a little bit longer, but my dispersion was just awful with it. And it got to the point where I have the TCBs in my bag now, just because I got so tired of my gapping from like my 7-iron to my 8-iron was almost like 15 yards. My dispersion, my misses were just off the planet. And I was like, I can't put together good scores this way. Like I was trying so hard to fight against, I was the opposite. I was trying so hard against playing the better irons and the heavier shafts. Oh. And I was so against playing all the heavier stuff and harder to hit stuff. And it's what fit best. And I would much rather be in something easier to hit sometimes.
Yeah. And that's, I get the question a lot, cause I do get the opportunity to test a lot of equipment, and they're like, people will ask like, do your scores fluctuate that much? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Like they really don't. I don't have them here. I've been doing a little shop organizing, and it's like, I can go play with my Persimmons and Blade golf clubs on my 3,200 yard 9-hole golf course that I go play. My score does not change. Like it really doesn't. It's like the 2 par 5s are 500 yards. So, you know, maybe I'll make an easier birdie or an eagle on like one of the par fives, but it's just a difference between hitting a 6-iron in or hitting a 5-wood in, because the 5-wood's got 21 degrees of loft and it's a steel shaft and it's a wooden club head. Like it, you know, yes, like the one is technically harder to hit, but again, I'm used to using both golf clubs. Both golf clubs have been fit. In theory, I'm sure over time, statistics will prove that the newer clubs are better in general. But like one or two shots for me, I always think to myself, well, that's something that I screwed up. It's not something that a golf club made a mistake. So for certain players, I think they get very caught up with like, oh, I need this because this is going to help me improve. But like, let's actually look at your weaknesses and find out where we can improve or improve your better shots, rather than just saying like something new is going to be better, because we don't know how it's going to be better.
Right. That's a great point.
Cool. Well, I don't want to change the topic too much because I like where this is going, but I'm curious. You talk about writing and fitting and building and making content, and what does your normal day look like? That's the first part of the question. And then you might not have normal days, but what's your favorite part?
Yeah. I mean, my normal day, I get up pretty early because I help take my kids to school and make breakfast and do all that stuff. And then I just kind of plug in and get writing. I would say usually from around 9 o'clock till noon, I'm either answering emails, doing a call, or locked into some sort of topic where I'm trying to get something out. And that can mean running into my shop and taking pictures, running outside and taking pictures. And then making sure that I don't say that I'm trying to get something out because I need to get something out. It's like, no, I usually get something in my head and I'm a bit of a obsessive person. So like, it's like, okay, I need to get this done. I have to like, in my own head, I have to create a goal of like getting something done to produce something that hopefully will help golfers. And then from there I can either use it to promote on social media or dig into my next topic, or again, go through emails and all that stuff. And then a lot of times, like a lot of people, from the time after school until dinner's down, like I'm a very busy guy. And then I kind of plug in at night again and kind of get back into it, spend some time on social media, answering questions, usually sometimes doing a video. I know there's a lot of people out there that truly like curate and organize and think of all these things through. And some of most of the videos are like, I'm either hitting golf balls in my garage and I'm like, this should make a video. I should go get my little iRange thing, like stick it up, get the magnet on my phone, and I'll just shoot this video. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And see what happens. I don't really think that far ahead in most cases. Now, I mean, as a company where I work, we get to plan a lot, and I'm involved in a lot of that planning. But from my own perspective, a lot of that stuff is very spur of the moment. And a lot of times, either sometimes it's questions from golfers online, or it's something that I kind of experienced while building a golf club, or putting a grip on, or changing a spec, where I'm like, people might find this interesting. I should really carry this from this little moment here, make a note, and then tomorrow morning, get plugging away again. And that's kind of the cycle when I'm not on the road covering tour events.
That's awesome. That's so cool.
How many tour events do you cover now, usually in a season?
In like mid-season, I'm usually doing like two a month. Which is pretty good, because you don't want to be out there too often. You can be, and you'll get absolutely every little nugget, but you don't really have to be. And I think that's the one thing that we've learned, is to be more efficient with our time. And I've definitely learned to be more efficient with my time, as well as be more efficient with what I'm looking to capture. Because in some cases I'll capture something, and I feel like this year I've done a much better job of it, where I'll go back and go through those pictures again and find something, reach out to somebody, get an answer about it, and then cover that again. Just because I took a picture of it 2 weeks ago doesn't mean that it's not relevant today, because someone else, like, because that player is still using it, and it's an opportunity to explain it to golfers, like what's actually going on with that individual golf club, or what's going on, or why it is there. Because you never know if someone's going to win. That's one of those weird, it's one of the really weird things about watching professional golf, is I'm sure I walked the range at the Amex and walked right by Nick Dunlap and was like, cool. And it's not offense to him, right? I don't follow a lot of like American college golf. So I thought, okay, like, cool, sponsors exemption. Like, that's awesome. Like, cool kid getting his like first couple shots at a PGA Tour event. And I'm sitting at home on Sunday, like glued to my television watching it as a fan. I'm like, this is like the coolest story ever. Like, this really is cool. And but the business part of my brain is like, you idiot, you should have just taken some pictures of his clubs. But you can't predict the future, so you know what, you don't dwell on it and you keep going on.
When you go to a tour event, how many, I mean, like, obviously there's like, you know, 125 man field or whatever event it is, how many clubs are you getting to per event, and how do you decide who you're photographing? Is there like a list of like, hey, we hit Tiger two events ago, so I mean obviously he's not that frequent anymore, but like, pick and choose a player, like, hey, we got Rory 2 weeks ago, so we don't need to get him this week, or how does that work?
I will say that I can thank some of our OEM partners. They will let us know, like, hey, like, we got something out new this week. Like, you should maybe take this opportunity to come out. So we'll do that. In other cases, we'll know that the player switched up the week before. We'll jump after it. A player won or had a high finish the week before, we'll kind of get after it. And then from there, it's more of just like snooping. I just try and be very silent. I don't want to bug people too much. And I still think it's one of those things where I realize that I'm in the position that I'm in because I'm respectful to the players and their time and the caddies and all of those things. And those guys all work very hard. So to be out there, it's just like popping in quick. Can I take some pictures? You got something interesting? In some cases, like, players, like, look, a lot of people gave James Hahn a lot of crap for all his live takes and PGA Tour takes. And that's fine. Like, that's fair. I was certainly not someone who is going to be very necessarily agreeable all the time with James, but then I see him at the Amex and he probably doesn't even know who I am or reads Twitter or cares one like stink about it. But see him on the range and he's got these like old golf clubs in his bag, these old Adams blades, which I thought were really cool. And I said, oh, James, these are sick. Like, how'd you get these? And like, he was like, oh yeah, he's like really excited to talk about them. And you know, that to me is like the biggest thing, is that, you know, a lot of these, some, not all, but some of these players are just kind of as geeky as we are when it comes to gear. Right. And they want to talk about cool stuff that they got, or they've got something new and they're excited about it. And that's where I just kind of jump in and start snapping. Really, that's all it is. I always say, like, if it interests me, it's like when people talk about like doing a job or whatever it happens to be, or they create a product. It's like, I thought it'd be really neat because I had this idea. I bet you other people will like this too. And if I see something interesting, it's like, yeah, I'm going to take a picture of this because this could be interesting to other people as well. That's why I'm in the, I kind of take back, that's why I'm here, because, you know, I have like, I don't say I have a vision or anything like that. Like that's kind of like way overstating it, but it's like, if I'm a gear nerd, there's probably a lot of other gear nerds out there that are just excited to see what the hell's going on here as I am. So,
right.
For sure.
As a gear nerd, is there a, I don't even know how to ask this. Is there like a setup or a player that like you've, I didn't want to say fanboy, but who has like the most interesting setup, or what, as like a gear nerd, are you just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy, or this is awesome, or I've never seen that this guy does something so, I don't know, outlandish. I don't know, something. What's the coolest thing that you see from a pro's bag? You don't even have to name the pro if you don't want to, but.
No, that's fine. To be honest, most players are very boring. And because they've played very similar stuff for a long time, and they're kind of used to it. As you know, there's very little difference from a top level PGA Tour player in many cases to the local guy that won't change out of a certain golf shaft. Like, they like the feel of it, they like the look of it, they're going to kind of stick with what they know. And to be fair, it got them to where they are, and so like, you're not going to argue with them at all. I still think one of the most interesting bags to follow all the time now, and I know we recently profiled them in Golf Magazine, but Adam Scott to me is like fascinating because he was with a single company for a very, very long time. And other than his putter, he's basically just been like, screw it, I'm going to use whatever works. Now, I know he's got a glove and ball and shoe deal with Titleist and FootJoy, but other than that, he doesn't care. He just doesn't care. He's gone through so many different iron sets. He's pretty much stuck with Vokey wedges for a long time. And I understand, like, if you're out there and you got Aaron Dill to your disposal, it's probably pretty hard to like not want to like go over and talk to him and get some stuff. But he is always willing to tinker. And as a guy who that didn't tinker for a really long time, in reality, used a lot of older stuff for a long period of time, he just says, like, I'm going to use what works. I'm going to find out what works. I'm going to continue to try what works. And I think it goes to show that just because you're one way at one point in your career or your life or whatever it happens to be, it doesn't mean that you can't go out and try and find something that's new or better that works for you better. And that's why I love every time I see him on the range, I'll like go peek over, because he goes through so many different iron sets. It's always fascinating to see what's in there. And if you look at his finishes, like, he just continues to play very, very high level golf. And when you hear certain players talk about certain things, and they're very, like, some players are very particular about gear, he's like, I'm going to try it and see what happens. And him and Justin Rose, another free agent now, Rose loves to switch up gear. And you'll find once in a while, you'll find like an old M2 or M7 or whatever. No, M5. Mm-hmm. Well, no, M3. Sorry. M7's not even, it was never a thing. but like an M3 Fairwood in his bag. And you're like, why? Like, this guy's got all this new stuff to his disposal. But you know what? It works. It works for him. So it's always interesting to see.
For sure. That's awesome. Yeah. What, if you guys have questions, hop on in, but I see a lot of things. So kind of a two-part thing, because I think of the Equipment Junkie. Somebody posted this on Instagram. I was noticing like a lot, especially with the new TaylorMade QI10, a lot of pros are not in the LS head where traditionally they usually would be fit into that. I was going to get like, why are so many pros going away from that, especially in the QI10? I don't know if it's in other models as well. But I also see that a lot of pros use a previous year's golf ball, especially like the Pro V1. I think I noticed like Anthony Kim's playing like the 2021, but I've seen that in a lot of players' bags, is they won't switch over. And is that just a preference thing, or is there just like something about like, hey, I played well with this ball, I don't want to switch it out? Also, how do you still get a 2000 Pro V1?
There's lots of extra kicking around, I'll tell you that. When need be, I'll put it that way. But the one thing is, I think a lot of times players are just very used to it, so they don't really want to change, which I understand, and that's very reasonable. If you have access to it, like, why not? Yeah. Even if you're a golfer out there and you stockpiled a bunch of golf balls because they were on sale, even like, I don't care what model it is, like, go and use it. Like, it's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. But as far as like the first part of the question, and this is, I do find this really fascinating, but I've kind of figured, I wouldn't say that I've figured it out, but my hypothesis is if you look at players' golf swings, they're so efficient with the way that they deliver the golf club. Like, they hit up on it, they reduce dynamic loft, so they create low spin loft. They don't need low loft. They don't need like these low lofted, low spin drivers because of the way they deliver the golf club. They're already delivering ideal conditions. So if you can create and continue to create ideal conditions with a little bit of extra forgiveness, you're still going to create high launch, low spin parameters and all of that stuff. Examples are, as you said, Rory into the core QI10. Colin Morikawa used the QI10 Max at one point. Now, I know, I think he's back to the sim, but he's like an odd case. He loves that driver and whatever. Brooks Koepka into the core model QI10. Even players on the like in Ping stable using like a G430 Max or the Max 10K, which I think Cameron Champ was using, or he was using at one point. And another example as well, Eric Cole. Most people would assume Eric Cole is going to go to the Black Ops Tour because it's a low spin, smaller tour profile, right? Like we talked about earlier, tour players are going to use the smaller model all the time. Well, he's actually using the standard model because if you give a lot of these players these low spin models, they actually don't spin it enough. And if you miss hit a driver that doesn't spin enough, you end up with a driver that misses really big and doesn't carry far enough. And I had someone reach out on Instagram and they sent me their numbers one time and they're like, I've got this driver, blah, blah, blah. And basically, like, they were spinning the driver at like 1800. And when they miss hit it, they spun it under 1500. And of course that thing fell out of the sky like a wounded duck because it doesn't have spin. It literally has golf ball has no lift to carry it up in the air.
Right.
So you need to go back wherever you got fit and you need to look at your loft. You need to look at where you're hitting it on the face and you need to figure out what's going on. Because if you're already hitting up on the driver and you're creating lower spin conditions, this is not good. Went back, literally, like, I forgot about the conversation, right? Like, I remember the conversation. I couldn't go back and like search up the profile of the player. I'm just sitting there like blindly answering questions to people.
Sure.
And I get a message a couple weeks later. It's like, oh man, I went back to my fitter and I looked at the messages and I was like, oh, sick. Like, how much? He goes, I gained like 40 yards in the air and my miss hits weren't as bad. And I was like, well, that's great. And the fitter was like, yeah, and again, fitters can only fit a golfer to the day that they had them. So there's like that. That's a part of the thing that you have to remember. But overall, like, they came back and said, yeah, like, you don't look at your best day. It's like when you talk to high performance athletes, they don't work out for their best days. They're feeling great. Like, they're going to perform. Like, you're not trying to raise your ceiling. Your ceiling is already high. You're trying to raise your floor to bring it closer to your ceiling. So when you are low performance, you are closer to your peak performance. And that's basically what you do with any golf club, where when you miss hit it, you're trying to continue to keep that high performance versus having that huge drop off because you went into a fitting bay and you were like, oh man, what 7-iron went the furthest? Well, yeah, that's great. But did you notice that you hit like 4 offline, like really, really badly? Like, let's kind of think about the holistic approach of the game of golf. Cause if you just want to play long drive 7-iron all day, have at it. Like, I'll fit you for whatever you want. Like, I don't care. I'm in the business of selling golf clubs. That's, you know, that's the fit. When you're working and you're selling golf clubs, that's kind of the thing. Like, if the golfer leaves happy and they got something that they feel is better and it is technically better, good for them. But your goal is also, as a fitter, is to communicate the goal of like playing better golf. And so then you look at the entire approach of what you're trying to do. And it's like, yeah, you know what? This iron goes a little bit shorter, but your dispersion's better, your spin's better, your angle of descent's better. This is going to help you play better golf, not the long drive 7-iron that you just hit 200 yards.
I do have a question here too. Do you think the change with the driver heads too has a lot to do with the way the game of golf is being played differently? This seems to be less necessity or less focus on working shots off the tee and stuff like that and playing more bomb and gouge golf. Do you think that has something to do with maybe going to a more of a core head, more forgiving head, because they're taking up over everything, where, you know, you go back and watch Tiger back in the day, he's cutting it and hooking it and doing all kinds of crazy stuff with it. Because, you know, for me, the core heads are harder to work. I know Rory's complained about having troubles trying to draw the ball like he used to because of the newer heads.
Yeah, I think the biggest part is the modern golf swing. And if you actually look at so just like one of those like weird little nuggets of like fitting in so info is like the only two clubs you ever actually want to hit up on are your putter and your driver. You're trying to create these like in a putter, you're actually trying to create basically zero backspin or like some forward spin, which is very, very difficult. And then you're trying to create lower spin conditions with your driver. From there, you're trying to hit down on everything else. So to create those conditions, the golf club has to bottom out and start moving in most cases, unless you're trying to like really adjusting your swing, not swing plane, but like swing path and your swing direction, unless you're trying to really alter like that hula hoop idea when you're moving that around. Once the club bottoms out and starts moving upwards, it actually starts moving left. It's kind of what Joe Mayo, Victor Hovland's former coach, talks about with the short game. If you hit, like you can, you know, manipulate hitting down, create spin, all this stuff. Well, to hit up on the ball, in theory, if you have a zero kind of whatever, there's a lot of technical stuff here, but like basically like once the club bottoms out, it wants to start moving left. Well, that's like the power cut, basically. There's very, very few players that are trying to hit a power draw. Now, again, Jake Knapp a few weeks ago, if you watch him, he did hit some draws, which was like sick on track, like sick on the shot tracer. Yeah. But he also, I don't think if I'm looking at the way that his like his delivery numbers based on his clubhead speed, he's probably teeing it. I'd have to look back at it. But he's probably hitting it, teeing it off a little lower to hit those draws. But he had so much more in the tank, like a lot of players do. He's trying to hit it straight. He's trying to hit fairways, and so that's really one of the reasons why you see these players go and gravitate towards these bigger drivers or the quote more forgiving drivers. And the last driver that I can think, other than I know Titleist makes like the four model, which is like the smaller model. The M5 from TaylorMade, they actually had an M5 Tour. And most people don't even like even realize that this thing was a product. But that was when some players on tour still wanted like the smaller, more workable driver. And even Rory, I think he joined TaylorMade a couple of like models before that. But he got into the M5 and he played the tour for like one or two events and then went right to the core M5 model. And never look back. And they basically were like, no one needs this driver. And from there, almost every company makes the 460 model. Very few make a 440 model or a smaller model. And when they do, it's something like the TSI4 or the Mizuno STG, which is, I think, 440. And that's, again, great low spin driver. And it works for certain players. But that's the fitting story, right? And that doesn't mean what works for the PGA Tour player is going to work for someone else, because I can think of a lot of players that might not swing as fast as a tour player that are really going to benefit from a low spin driver, although they might not think they do, right? They're like, I'm not good enough. It's like, well, actually, because you're not good enough, you're not delivering the club in a good way, but we're going to get those numbers to work better for you by going to this X model, whatever it happens to.
Yeah. I actually saw that a lot fitting with Callaway, fitting older golfers. There were a lot of like senior aged golfers that fit into the paradigm triple diamond head for that exact same reason. And they were like, well, I thought that was the tour head. And I was like, you need to kind of get that out of your mind, because exactly what you were saying, like you're not delivering the club very well. So we need to get those numbers to a place where your ball's actually going to react like you want it to.
The ZX5 LS was a cool example of that. The more forgiving model, but the low spin model that helped a lot of higher handicaps too.
Great driver. Mm-hmm. Really, really, really solid driver. Creates a lot of good ball speed. But it's lower spin and it's lower launching, and people don't assume that they need the low launch or the low spin driver. I can tell you, you know, I'd probably see it in a lot of fittings, right? If you come over the top and you're creating spin dynamics where you're not creating really good impact dynamics into the golf ball, a low spin driver for someone who actually quote unquote slices the golf ball works better, because not only are you reducing your spin axis, you're also reducing the amount of spin that is being created. And when you reduce spin, you can lower ball flight. You can really kind of reduce dispersion a little bit, and you're just helping that golfer find what's going to work best rather than just defaulting to like you need the high lofted draw model. Because if you're using a high lofted driver and you already spin it too much, well, all you're doing is just hitting it shorter.
I have one more fitting question for you before I ask you some more fun questions, but
they're all
I won't name
I won't name names as far as brands go, but I have run into issues with certain brands, one brand in particular, where we've had to refit a lot of people because they will fit people maybe too heavy or too low of launch. They're trying to manipulate numbers to make a sale. And kind of like some of those golfers are none the wiser. So I'd love to hear, like, what would you say like just a normal average golfer needs to know going into a fitting? Because I think a lot of people can go in blind, and if there's like a bad fitter or a fitter who's more like in it for the commission and not so much to make sure you get the right golf equipment, they're just kind of like walking out of there like, wow, this was amazing because I hit, you know, 2300 on the spin number, but it's like, yeah, you can't get that club around and we just manipulated that. And so I'd love to, like, what can we tell people, like, hey, this is what you need to have ready with you when you go into a fitting, even if you're not like a golf or a club junkie or a tech junkie?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the biggest thing is to ask why. Ask why. That's all you got to do. Sounds so simple, but it's actually like very complicated. And the reason I say that is, again, kind of a simple answer, but something that obviously takes a lot of time to get to that point, is that I don't think that great fitters have to be someone who understands the numbers. I think it's very important. I think great fitters are great communicators. And yeah. I've always said that. I've always said, if I was ever to, and I've talked to, like, when we do our Fully Equipped podcast, one of the co-hosts of the show is Chris McCormick. He is the head of, like, basically fitter education at True Spec Golf. And we've kind of had this discussion many times and said, I'd rather have someone who's a great person at understanding soft skills and how to communicate in different ways versus someone who just comes into me, tells me they know everything, looks at the numbers and doesn't know how to talk to a golf. Because a club fitting experience is a customer service experience.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. And I know this is where I get kind of salesy, because it is, I mean, in reality, it is a sales job, but the goal is to have that golfer play better golf, because you can sell as many golf clubs as you want just based on distance or whatever, but you're not going to have repeat business, and someone's going to tell somebody else. And it's the old rule of sales. And I've worked in sales in different industries, and I've worked in communications in different industries. And it is, you know, 10% of your customers create 90% of your profit, and you know, the other 90% create the other 10, which is great. Right. But you want that repeat business. You'd love to have 90% of your customers create 90% of your business, right? Like, you know, the goal is to have people that recommend you. And out of 9 great experiences and 1 great experience, that 1 bad experience is going to tell 10 times more people than all the other people combined who had great experiences. So because of that, you have to be a good communicator. So if someone is like, if you're really not sure, or even if you're like, you know, you're just curious, right? Like, just ask why. That a good fitter, a really, really good fitter, will tell you why and explain why something else wasn't as good. Now, again, there are people who can say whatever they want during a fitting, and I understand that. But I do think that in almost every case, a fitter is there to help golfers play better golf. So it's important for that golfer to understand why, and then say, like, well, why do you think this works better than this for me? And that communication level will be shown very quickly, right? Because most people don't ask why. It's like the little kid from the Animaniacs. I'm obviously showing my age at this point. There was that little kid from the Animaniacs, and they just annoyed the other characters. Like, why? People think that it's annoying. Like, if you're a fitter, or you're someone who, like, is not confident in what you're doing, that becomes a frustrating experience. But if you know what you're doing and you're confident in what you're doing, it quickly becomes apparent that you're confident and you're knowledgeable of what you're talking about, because you can explain through that process very quickly, whereas other people will not. So just always, always, always ask questions, and take that when you are going through your fitting process to just better understand why, because you're going to leave as a golfer more confident because you are hopefully learning something along the way about your golf swing, your equipment, and leading to better golf.
I love that. Be curious.
Be curious.
Yeah, I love it. All right. Kind of rapid fire round. Not really, though. What is your favorite? Give me a list of your favorite clubs of all time. I saw you posting on Instagram
there's a couple of stories where it's like, this is my, I think, I can't remember exactly what the club was, but give me a couple of your all-time favorite clubs.
I will and forever be the biggest fan of Mizuno MP37s. They're not their most popular blade of all time. Most people say the 33s. Now, the 33s are more forgiving because they have a longer heel toe length, which makes them have a lower center of gravity. So most people who have like had a first blade experience, they really like those. The MP37s have a pretty high center of gravity, and they're pretty short heel to toe, and they're a little ugly in the short irons. They're a little boxy in the heel. But I can't say that it's a look that I would prefer with a modern iron, but I just love that set of golf clubs. I don't know what it is. I've used them. I've got a set of them. And to me, that's like the coolest set of irons like ever, just because it's a cold, hard piece of steel that was forged into that shape, and I love it. As far as Fairway Woods, old Sonartec stuff, old TaylorMade stuff is really good. What was the? I'm trying to think of the all-time Fairway. I can't remember what I posted the other day.
I wish I could remember.
Oh no, it was the Titleist. It was the 906 series, because Rory used to bash those things around like crazy. That was sick. Like you go back and watch some old Rory highlights where he hit those Fairway Woods. It was pretty dope. That was when he had like, he was still like, I don't want to, like, dopey Rory, like unfit Rory with like moppy hair. Like he just didn't care at all.
Baby fat Rory. We call him baby fat.
Yeah.
Rory.
He got away with absolute pure talent and, maybe a little less physical fitness. But used to bash around those. That's always really cool. All the old, like the old Titleist drivers and some of the original, like, I would say even like the Cleveland Launcher drivers. I got one of those. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Some of that stuff you can, that's where like, I love, like last year I built like my high school set that I'd always wanted. I think I probably spent like $400 on it. And if I was back when I was 14, if I really wanted all those clubs, it would cost me about $3,000. So there's some good value out there, folks. If you're looking for used gear, it might not be the fanciest stuff, but, those kind of things are always really fun to find. And, I know I talk so much about new equipment, but you can find great value. You can find great opportunity to play great golf. And it doesn't have to always be like this thing where you're chasing the newest and greatest thing. Because let me tell you, if I could find like an early low mileage, like box Volvo station wagon, I'd drive the hell out of that thing still, because it's pretty dope. So, yeah. You know, you can have a lot of fun with stuff that doesn't always have to be new.
Right.
Piggybacking off his real quick question, his rapid fire. Are there any golf clubs you consider like timeless or ageless, like things that still stack up now?
Yeah. I mean, you could find like an old, Ping Answer 2 stainless steel thing is just as good as it was 25 years ago as it is now. Fairway Woods, it's harder. It really is a lot harder. You could probably find some Tour Edge Fairway Woods, some older stuff from like kind of the first couple series. That was very, very like cool technology that they used to the combo, the brazing that they used to create the titanium and steel club head. Like not a lot of people were using that. They were expensive for a reason. I have one somewhere, again, not right now with me, but if you hit it off the screws, it still has a lot of ball speed. It spins a little more than like modern Fairway Woods, but it's still very, very good. So, something like those, like putters are always great. You know, you get an old I2 wedge. Thing's great. Like, it's awesome. Like an old I2 wedge is still a great I2 wedge as long as it has grooves left in it. So it's mostly the short game stuff that kind of is more timeless. But you can find some, like, again, you can find a set of 30-year-old blades. They're just going to perform just like a new set of blades. They're just going to look a little different.
Right.
Rad.
That's awesome. All right. Well, speaking of new equipment, I can't let you go without telling us, what are your favorite clubs from this year that you've tested or seen or...
The,
I'm a big, releases, so, you're like, these are awesome.
No, I try and be like a little more agnostic in this list. I'm like a big fan of the PX Sobra QI Max 10K.
the triple Aero, diamond version of
them. Aero
that took
speed,
me so long to catch on to.
AI.
That's so funny.
Through my own testing, personally, I've been a big fan of the Cobra drivers this year. The PXG drivers this year, I think they've made like the biggest steps they've ever made, and I think they keep up with absolutely anything. I got to go through the testing process of like going and getting fit, with their product, and I get fit with a lot of product. For golfers who want forgiveness, it's so hard to ignore the QI 10 Max. It's so hard to ignore the Dark Speed X model, the Ping. The greatest thing is there's no bad product. I know it sounds very homerish, right? But it's not. It's the fact that like I don't fit into this product, but I can fit into this product. There's so your chart of opportunity of finding a product is there for every single golfer, and I think people need to realize that. And the way that companies have, a lot of times you'd see models that were very, very close together. If you were to put them on a chart of like launch and spin, some drivers and or like launch, spin, and forgiveness or whatever, you want to create like a matrix of decisions. And yeah, the low spin driver might be like way off the chart for like certain players. The other two are like kind of close. There's two other models. Now there's separation for everybody, and every company's doing this. So there's greater opportunity to say like, okay, I'm this player up here. There's four drivers that are going to work really well for me. Let's find out which one of those four is actually the best. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the great thing about what I do, is the goal is to educate golfers in that process and in that decision-making process, because something's not going to work for everybody, but there's something out there for every player. And that is the most important thing. So it always comes down to the individual. There is no bad product out there. Anything mainline from these OEMs, are spending way too much money on R&D. They're spending way too much money on manufacturing, that you can feel confident if you get fit into a product and it's the one that's working for you, that you know it's going to be pretty hard to beat.
I'll save that. Never mind. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But what's in your bag right now? Do you like have a bag that you are like, I'm going to go out and actually play golf for enjoyment or whatever? Do you have a set of clubs? I've heard it from other guys who test golf clubs for a living. Some are like, this is my gamer set, and I test all these clubs. And some are like, I never play with a set of clubs, like the same set twice.
Yeah, I definitely have like what I would consider like my gamer set right now. There's like probably two or three certain like club categories that I can kind of interchange. And again, because I fit and basically build all my own stuff after the fact, if it shows up or if it comes the way that I request, and then I'm still going to do something to it anyways, cause I'm a sicko. it's more of like a confidence thing. It's like, I know that I did this. So, and I think that's why I do it anyways. It's like, I can't blame anybody else at this point. Like I literally know that I put these things together. So if this thing doesn't work, it's my fault. If this doesn't feel right, it's my fault. I made this decision. So for me, it's almost like a point of like personal responsibility. But as far as what's in my bag, I got some new SM10s. Fit by Mr. Dill. We got a nice video up on YouTube somewhere on the Fully Equipped channel. You can go watch that fitting. It's pretty cool. I did learn something along the way because I used some of their former product, and I did find out that there was something through my own decision-making process that would work better, and having someone else oversee that, even as someone who is like quote-unquote an experienced fitter. Getting a second opinion is always very important, especially from people that work with the best players in the world. Probably a good idea. My irons, I used them all last year. And yes, I tested a whole bunch of other stuff, and I could pick three or four that are just as good. But the Mark II ZX7s have been my iron of choice for almost all of last year. I remember getting original photo samples and hit them, tested them out. And, you know, they sent like half a set. It was like a random like 4 iron and a 7 iron and a wedge or something like that. Mm. And I hit them and I reached out and I was like, can I order the rest of these? Like I'll pay for them, like whatever you want. Like this is the set that I want to play. Like I know hitting these, like these things are very good. And I think if you talk to anybody who's got a set of Strix on, you probably be like, yeah, I got fit for them and I saw results, right? Like that is the biggest thing, is that it's still a brand that people don't necessarily always identify very, very top of mind. I think it's definitely been changing, but that's what's in my bag. That's what I'm using. You ask the question, I'm going to answer it. That's what I always, like, appreciate. People in my position sometimes aren't very confident answering that question, but no, it is the case. If you run into me in the playing golf and you go, oh, you lied about what's in your bag, it's like, well, no, I'll just tell you what's there. Like, I don't care. It's not like I'm running around ducking the paparazzi.
people in the bushes start taking pictures of your bag.
Yeah, no, no one cares. No one's ever recognized me in an airport. I'll tell you that right now, which is something I have no worries about ever in my life.
Yeah.
And then I've using the Mez long putter. I've loved using it. I've used it since last year. I tried a long putter experiment, kind of stuck with it. I've got a bunch of other standard length putters that I really like using. No issue. Never, putting is really not a big issue in my golf game, but I wanted to try the long putter. It's going to stick around for now until something else comes out of the bag or I just get bored, which is very likely to happen still. And then driver right now is the PXG. I would put that head to head with the Dark Speed only because I've had the chance to test them like head to head. I've hit TaylorMade, very, very good. Hit the Callaway, very, very good. But for some reason, there's something about those two drivers that just work awesome for my golf swing. And then I got a PXG Black Ops 3-wood right now. I've also got a TaylorMade Tour, the QI10, which I think is looks really awesome. And then the Dark Speed 5-wood to me, the little the titanium LS model is awesome because, again, for me, I play my 5-wood a lot out of the rough. So having a smaller head that gets to the rough is exactly what I want out of that club. So if you know, for a smaller headed fairway, I think it's awesome. So that's what's in my bag.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think we're all about to head to Scottsdale. For Curated has a golf summit. So all of the brands come and we get to test everything. So almost every manufacturer, not everyone, but we don't do Ping, we don't do PXG, but all the other ones will be there. And I think last year, I think we all three of us were incredibly same kind of thing. We hit Strixon irons and we were like, what is going on? These are unbelievable. The last 2 years we were just like, man, they are like waiting in the wings. Nobody knows what's happening here, but these are incredibly good.
I watched the Finding Feel Titleist mini doc that they had. I think it came out last Friday or something, and I was watching it, and I do have a set test of the T150s, and I was watching this, and I was like, damn, I love this documentary. This is so cool. So I went out and I put them out, brought them out into my like hitting bay, which is just my garage. Sounds really fancy. It's just my garage without a car in it. And I was hitting them and I was like, man, these things are so good. They are so good. They offer so much distance. They do feel really good. They're a little bigger than like the previous generation, like the T100S, which is an iron that I played a couple of years ago, or I guess when it came out, the second generation of them, and played those all last year, basically, or the year before, sorry, sick. And hitting those, I was like, man, a lot of golfers are going to love these things. And I love them. I do really love them. But it's, you know, it always comes down to that fitting element and like trying to pick what works for certain players. And again, I could literally pick an iron from every OEM and be very, very happy boy. But that's what's in my bag. But the Finding Feel thing is pretty sweet. I think they did a really good job showing kind of the behind the scenes stuff they do when they're testing. And I think more OEMs are going to go down that route a little bit of like showing what's behind the curtain, because people are always asking that question. And if they can deliver their message the way they want to, is always very interesting. It's my job to deliver it the way I'd like to deliver it.
Sure. But
the fact that they did it themselves, I think is still a pretty neat thing to check out.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, we want to be respectful of your time. My last question, and then you guys can hop in if you have anything, but I had this like, what I would love to hear, like, what is the craziest story you have? Coolest story you have? I don't know if it's a tour. It can be anything you want, but if there's like, hey, I'm at a party, this is the one story I'm dying to tell people that I kind of have like in the chamber ready to go, we would love to hear it as long as you're willing to share whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of little things from the road that are just like kind of fun to watch. From my own like personal experience, one of the coolest things that like I got to do was a very wealthy person got fit one time where I was working, and they really liked the set that they had. And they basically called back and were like, I want three more of this exact set for like the places that I play. I don't want to travel with my golf clubs. And when you're very wealthy, you get that opportunity to do that. It's pretty sick. No, whatever. And so I built three sets of golf clubs, and between like three sets of golf clubs with technically 13 pieces each, because we didn't do a putter, there was like maybe like 14 grams of variance between like the whole three sets of whatever clubs. because I went through and weight sorted every shaft and every head and like kind of dialed them in and then did the grips and did the whole bit. And I was like, these things, you could literally grab a 7-iron from that set and switch into that set. And no one would ever know the freaking difference of where they came from. And it took some time. It was like a full day's worth of work to build those three sets of golf clubs. But that was my goal when I started that process. I was like, I am going, and I think about this when I build every golf club. I'm just not, no, it's just not very often I get to build three sets of the identical thing. But at the end, I was going through and I was like, man, this is such a freaking cool set of clubs. And like, that was just such a, it was such a point of like, just to be like very frank, like it was a point of like being like really proud of like, you know, someone's going to really enjoy these. Someone gets exactly what they wanted. And I always think like I try anytime I don't build a lot of golf clubs for other people anymore, but I want to apply like that goal of like building my own clubs or building that set to anybody else's, because I respect that like they worked hard and earned their money and wanted to spend money to have their golf clubs built by wherever I was working. And I think that's why like I love what I do, because at the end of the day, like the goal is to deliver something to that individual. Yes, we are a golf industry. Yes, the goal is to do a lot for like a lot of people, but at the end of the day, you're working with individuals and the goal is to help deliver that, whether it be one club or what, 36 golf clubs? Yeah, no, 39 golf clubs. There you go. Math was a little off there. But the goal is to deliver something that's going to work for those golfers. And to me, that was like such a fun thing to be able to do. It's still probably like, it's the only time I've ever done that for like three sets of golf clubs, which were matched up to another set. So there's technically four sets. But to be able to do that was really fun. And the guy was really nice and really like talked to him. I was kind of in the back building golf clubs, but he was nice. Probably paid for my paycheck for a few months. so yeah, it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
Sweet.
Did you ever get feedback from that guy again? Like hear back from him or repeat? And he's like, hey, I want that Ryan guy to build my next four sets.
No. My goal as a builder when I was where I was just kind of, I was a background guy. Yes, I used social media for my own stuff when I wrote a little bit, but my goal is not to like, I was never really customer facing, which was, you know, in some ways like a big benefit.
I thought that was going to be a crazy story where the guy, he could feel the 14 gram variance in the entire set. I thought that's where that was going.
Just like things were horrendously off.
That 1 gram and that one club, that was terrible.
That guy's name was Tiger Woods. And he was like, I cannot hit my window. You son of a. That's awesome. Well, I don't know. Brady, do you guys have anything else, or do we need to let Ryan go to bed or, you know, regrip his friends' clubs? Cause it's already 11:15 where you are.
I'm good. I appreciate the insight and the conversation, man. I learned a lot. It was, I wanted to participate more, but I was enjoying just listening to it so much and how you said things and simplified it. I just appreciate having the opportunity to listen to you talk about what you do. It's pretty rad. It actually gives me some things to think about going to the summit. Sure. Whenever I'm going, because I want to get myself fit for a couple of things just because it helps me learn. If I'm getting fit, I learn like by how they fit me, you know what I mean? But now I'm going to be kind of thinking about things I don't usually think about as I'm getting fit. So this was very insightful.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here. Thanks so much for your time, Ryan.
Hey, no worries. No worries. It's fun to talk. And I think like that kind of mindset to me is like, something that I try and bring to everything is like every chance you get to do something is like an opportunity to learn. And I think I talk to other fitters about that all the time. I never think that I'm the smartest guy in the room. I think as soon as you have that mentality, you've kind of almost put up a roadblock to like learn something new. And always a good little piece of advice for, I always thought this was kind of funny. Glenn Mahler, who is now a retired fitter at Titleist, he put this with me like years and years ago, which I thought was great, is and he was talking about how you hit golf clubs and how you hit shots. And it was like, I call it a Glennism, because it was just like one of those funny things that he said, but it was like, it's always easier to make up come down than it is to make down go up. So if you got a golf club, you can hit high, you can always hit it lower. But if you have a golf club that you're launching low, it's very, very hard to get it to go really high up in the air. And I was like, man, I really like that. Cause he goes, you got to fight gravity. You got to fight everything. He says, man, just hit it high and then learn to hit it lower. Cause let me tell you, gravity will help bring that thing down no matter what. And when I talk to these people, like I bring these things in and I'll give them credit for it too. Like, again, I'm not the end all be all of information here. So anytime you're out there and you get the chance to again, I'm not talking about me. You get to talk to someone else, talk to another golfer, talk to another fitter, take that opportunity. Cause it's you never know what kind of nugget you're going to get out of it. And it's always fun to hold on to those and help other golfers down the line.
That's awesome. If people want to connect with you, Ryan, where's the best place for them to find you at? So on social media or web?
Yeah. Instagram is always open, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's RDS Brath. Let me check here. It's like trying to remember your own phone number when you were a kid. Never use it that much.
All right.
It's just at RDS Barath, Barath. Perfect. Check me out there on Instagram. It's the easiest way. The DMs are always open. Do my best to get back to people as quickly as possible and hopefully help along the way.
Awesome. All right, guys. Well, make sure you follow Ryan on social media. We'll have this episode out on Wednesday, which is super exciting. Ryan Brath, first guest on the Pardon on Pod, so first friend of the pod. And only friend of the pod so far. So that's pretty exciting. Would love to have you back on, but thank you so much for your time. It was awesome.
Hey, no worries. No worries. Thank you guys for having me on. It's always fun to talk golf with other golfers.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys. Thanks so much for watching, listening. Make sure you like, subscribe, you know, wherever you find your podcasts at. Like us on YouTube, all those kinds of good things that everybody says. But have a good night. We will see you guys next week. Thanks.